My name is Natalie Peters, and this is June 30th, 1994, and I'm here with Clifford Smith, and we're going to talk about Harford County history. Let's start with how your family came to Harford County.
My grandfather was a captain on one of these barges that used to run food up and down the canal to Baltimore. In fact, he was murdered on one of them.
Was he really?
A man drove a spike to his head because he thought he had gotten some money, a payment. So we've been here for quite a long time.
Can you tell me about your grandfather?
I don't know a thing about the gentleman except that he was one of those barge captains. And my father, of course, followed the river with Bob Vandiver when he worked on the tugboats and followed the river and ducking and one thing or other like that and fishing. And I've been a resident of Havre Grace for as long as I can remember and as far as I can look back and see.
Tell me, what are some of your early memories of Harford County or Havre Grace?
Havre Grace used to be a real nice town. Of course, we had the racetrack, and during the race season, we always used to run up on Union Avenue. We lived about a block from there, and the traffic would be blocked up for blocks and blocks and blocks, and slow, and we'd go up there and watch all the traffic. Of course, that's been 70 years ago now. And so it was quite an experience for us. And of course, I also remember when the first electric train went through Havre Grace. So that was a great thing, too.
Tell me about that.
Of course, we have the steam engine. We lived about three blocks from there. You'd think, of course, at nighttime, those trains coming across that bridge keep you awake. But after a while, you just didn't know anything about it. Just slept right on through. Then, of course, when the electric trains came through, they cut a lot of the noise out. But that was a great experience. And then, of course, they made the old bridge into a double-decker bridge.
And you remember when they were doing that?
Good gracious, yes.
So, what year was that?
Oh, Jimmy, let's see now. I was married 38. Must have been around the 30s. And they made it up. Double-decker bridge, at that time it was the only one in the country. And a man who used to live with us was a toll collector on there. And it was quite a big thing. It was a big money maker for somebody. In fact, it was more or less privately owned. It was not a state-owned bridge. And
Hello, how are you? 58 years ago,
I grabbed the old broad and kissed her. She thought I was going to throw her over. It had a walkway across it, about three and a half or 4 foot wide walkway, and I thought it was a good chance to grab her. I did.
Thought it was a goner.
There was a corner of Old Prairieville. We walked the bridge, and of course it was swinging bridge. I saw it for the boats that go through and boats up for the railroad and that bridge too. So anytime there's a boat coming up, of course there used to be quite a few boats come up the river. And on Monday nights especially there was the excursion boats going down to every night down the bay and back, and of course there was always a good time on that, and usually a fight or two to make things a little better. But other than that, I think it's pretty nice around here. And nice, really a nice country. I remember when they were making the marina down here at the city park. That was long about 36 and 37 they were making that. We were just courting then, weren't we? Yes. And we sat on the park net all day, and we were going chug, pump the mud out and making the island and everything there.
Tell me what else you remember about the racetrack.
I worked at the racetrack. I was a pilot.
What did you do?
I pilot here and I pilot there.
I was going
to school and I got a job for the summer meet, for the spring meet, to pick up trash and paper around the track. I made $12 a week, and back then that was real money. I was around about 14, 15 years old, and that was money. And of course, then during the afternoon, we'd sit there and watch the races and keep any big paper from blowing on the track. And Mr. Ross was the manager of the track, and every day you'd see Mr. Ross walking around the track, and he could see a pebble the size of a penny on the track, and he'd pick it up and throw it away because it hurt the horse's hoofs. And that was a big thing for Happy Grace at races, was for about 2 weeks in the spring and 2 weeks in the fall. Brought a lot of people in, and of course a lot of people rented rooms. But other than that, we had a pretty nice town. Very nice town. And everybody knew everybody. And I guess my biggest part of my time, I worked out in the grocery store in Happy Grace. And I got to know everybody pretty well, and they were wonderful people. And in fact, everybody was nice around here, pretty much. And there was no racial problem or nothing like that. He was a Southerner. I went to work for him. He said, "Clifford, we have a lot of black trade here. You treat everybody with the same respect." And I learned an awful lot from that man. I learned to respect people. Didn't care what color they were or anything else about it. I learned to respect them for what they were. And that meant a lot to me over the years. I learned a lot from that man and his wife. They were good people.
What else do you remember about working at that grocery?
Well, see, at that time, there was the Inman store, Torpy store, Axon store, Harry Lauder's, Lou Claire's, all a lot of these corner stores that all delivered, all had their trucks or boys riding buses to deliver groceries. But my man I worked for, he was pretty smart. He said, "One of these days, we're not going to have any corner stores. Everything's going to be controlled by about three or four companies. Then you'll pay what they want." And he's right. Mm-hmm. He's a very astute businessman. And he knew what he was talking about. But it was good. And I worked in the store and learned how to cut meat and that sort of thing. And the most important thing is I learned how to meet and talk to people. That was the most important thing I think I ever learned there, and how to treat people.
How old were you when you started working there?
Oh, about 16, I think.
And how did you get that job?
Well, Mrs. Char, she dealt there at the store. She knew that I needed a job, and she knew Mr. Inman needed help, so she got us together, and it worked out pretty good, and we hit it off pretty nice for a long, long time.
And how long did you work there?
I guess close to 20 years, didn't I? Mm-hmm. Yeah, close to 20 years. I was making $9 a week when I got married. Of course, I got married, I got raised to 12.
That was a big thing.
Of course, we went to a five-room house.
Oh,
of course, had a toilet on the porch, in the back porch. We didn't have a bathtub, we kept clean. But no problem.
You were paying $5 a month?
$12 a month.
$12 a month was your rent?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I made $12
a week.
But we managed. We ate good. Then, of course, my daughter came along a year later, all but two or three weeks. And so, everything else was fine. Mm-hmm. Everything was fine.
What about now? What year was this about that you were getting married? And this
we got married in 1938. We'll be married on the 31st of July. It'll be 56 years.
Wow, that's great.
It is.
That is great.
It's awful being married to one woman that long.
Children, day was the 50th anniversary.
Yeah, 56 years.
That's terrible.
We had two children, and we adopted a son. He's out in Oklahoma. And our two daughters, one of them just came back from South Africa. Another just came back from Mexico. It's the Salvation Army. So I've been going to the Salvation Army. That's been my church since I was about 9 years old.
70 years?
Yeah. And I've been very active in the Salvation Army ever since we were married. And of course I served in the Navy during World War II, all through the South Pacific. And then during the Korean War I was stationed on the repair ship at the home port, was in Norfolk.
Tell me about some of that experience. In the military?
I don't like to talk too much about
that. Okay.
it was rough. That was all I can say about it.
How was your work with the Salvation Army?
Very enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you kind of wonder if it was all worthwhile, but then when you get right down to the nitty-gritty, the fun it was.
Can you tell me about some of your experiences with the Salvation Army?
Yes. We had a man here by the name of Major Moore, a real kind, compassionate, loving man. He was in charge of work here. But he drove me crazy. I was like the head deacon, we'll say. And it was Christmas time. Of course, we'd get food baskets out. He'd gotten a whole new way to get some chickens cheap. He wanted me to go up the country and get them. I thought they'd be all ready to get to pick up, you know. I wouldn't go because I didn't know where it was. So I made him go with me. There was snow but that deep on the ground. We had to catch the chickens. And we gave away live chickens that time. And he thought it was hilarious, and I thought I could have killed him. But no, we've had some real times, I mean. But see, the Salvation Army is not only a welfare thing, but it's also a church, more importantly. And of course, my two daughters are captains in the Salvation Army. Now they went to school for officers training down in Atlanta there, and their husbands, and one went to Africa. And, well, both of them have been in Mexico, and then one, and she went, one was in Mexico, went to Africa, and she's back home now, and going to teach down in Louisville, and the other one's down in Miami, Florida.
Working. We got them all over.
And we have five great grandchildren.
Five great grandchildren. We got a granddaughter that's a lieutenant.
We also got a granddaughter stationed in Florida, who's a Salvation Army officer, her and her husband. So I guess your life hasn't been completely wasted. We've got all the kids up there on the wall, and there's not a bum in the crowd. None of them smoke or drink, or have caused their parents a bit of trouble.
It's our oldest daughter, and that's our youngest daughter.
Yes, sir. None of them have caused a bit of trouble.
That's their family.
So we've got a lot to be thankful for.
Now, you say your family first got involved with the Salvation Army when you were nine. Do you
about
remember
9 years
that?
Old, yeah. They came to Habit of Grace. They, down there at the end of Green Street, they put up a tent. That was the first place. And then, of course, they had meetings there. And then they moved up there where the little Bible bookstore is up on next to the Western Auto on the Washington Street. Mm-hmm. They moved in there. I helped them move in there. And then here about, how was the?
Sean's.
20 years, about 20, 21. About 21 or 20 years ago, they built a new place out here on Seneca Street.
I think Sean would be 22.
Yeah.
And our son dedicated.
And we've been
active. Of course, he left the Army.
And we've been active all during this time at the Salvation Army. We've always done all we could, but we're getting to the point now and living out here. This was my daughter's home, and when they went to school, we sold our place in Havre de Grace and bought this one. Which was the best thing we ever did, because it's quiet. Mm-hmm. The only thing is we're far away from everything. Mm-hmm. But then I was also president of ARP for about 4 or 5 times. And that kept me hopping quite a bit, getting the newsletter ready every month and doing about 10,000 other things, but I enjoyed it. But out here, I don't have time because I got the grass to cut and the garden to do, and I had rabbits and chickens. And of course, we were supposed to go away last winter, stay all winter, and I had chickens and rabbits, so I killed them all, put them in the freezer. We didn't go. So now we got to get more rabbits and more chickens. Other than that, we've had a pretty good life.
Tell me about your early time in Havre de Grace. What else do you remember about being a child there?
I guess about the best times, I'm going to be real frank with you. When I was growing up, it was rough. People today on welfare, see, back then there wasn't any. If you didn't have it, you did without. I've eaten many a catfish head stew and glad to get it. And many a time I've gone to bed hungry. And I think maybe it's been good for me. I appreciate what I have now. And it was rough. I worked on CWA when I got to be about 19 years old, Civil Works Administration. That was one of those government projects.
What did you do for them?
We changed the course of the stream down here at Edgewood. in the middle of winter waiting for water up around there. Of course, I supplied the boots, and it was cold, but we managed. That was it. Garland Greer, remember, you remember him, remember his name, don't you, I imagine?
He was the mayor.
Yeah. Well, he was the foreman of the job. I think he went in the Army during Warren Balch's Army, I believe, didn't he? Yeah. But he was a foreman on the job. That's been a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. What about... go ahead.
Go ahead, no.
What about the Depression?
Well, my stepfather and my brother worked 1 or 2 days a week to get hominy, beans, or that kind of stuff, soft pork, whatever they had. That was it. But you worked for it. Nobody gave you anything. If you didn't work, you didn't get it.
And how old were you about that time?
Well, I was around about 13 or 14, I expect.
And what were your responsibilities then?
Anyway, I could pick up a nickel or a dime doing work, cutting wood or doing running errands or anything else like that. I did it. And in fact, I had a little job after school with a family named Hill here in Havity Grace that used to go down and say she had an invalid husband. And I'd go down there every afternoon after school. I'd do all her shopping for it, the stores and things. And then I think I had about 25 cents a day for that. But if you didn't work, you didn't get anything. There was no welfare, and nobody gave you nothing. That was it.
Did your family have a garden?
We didn't have room for a garden. We had a yard, I guess, about as big as this, and over in the corner of it was a, well, this is just not very nice, but it was a privy. Mm-hmm. I did have the job of cleaning that out. Oh, that's a wonderful job of hauling to the dump. But didn't even have room enough to have a garden or have a, or move the privy from one spot to the other. But it wasn't bad. I survived, and I think I'm a better man for it. I didn't grow up with my hands stuck out expecting something for nothing. And my kids all grew up to be decent, respectable people. What more can I ask? Nothing.
Sounds great. What kind of entertainment did you have as a young person and a child?
Entertainment?
Were there films, or did you have a pickup baseball game? Or
you used to play Duck on the Rock.
What's that?
Well, we couldn't afford a ball or nothing like that. So you'd give a big rock and put it in the middle of the road, and then you put a small rock on top of it. Then you'd get back here about as far as you could. You'd throw other rocks at it and try and knock it off. And so the guy's rocket was on there, he'd try and put it on before you could catch him again, you see. And as far as movies, it cost you a nickel to go to the movies. If you had a nickel, you could go and you'd buy a bag of peanuts for a nickel. It was pretty good entertainment. But as far as other entertainment, that's all. You made your own. We had next door to us, a couple of them could play, one played a guitar, one played a mandolin, and we were together all on the porch at night and sing and that kind of stuff. And there was no television, forget it, there wasn't any. We had radio, but that was it. And we enjoyed that, and that was it. Played just plain Bill, and Pepper McGee and Molly and all that. We just thought we were living on top of the world when we had that, but it was wonderful. We thought it was. But we survived. But it was great. And we, oh, my stepfather used to fish, net fishing. All the nets would reach from here, way up past 155, maybe for a mile even. It's about a half a mile. They'd go up, sometimes the fishing nets would be a mile, and they'd be about 8 and 10 feet deep. They call them drift nets. They'd put them out, and they'd let them drift down the river, and then they'd take them up and gets fish out of them in the spring of the year for herring and shad and that kind of stuff. We did that.
That was your stepfather's profession?
Yeah.
Did you help out with that?
Oh, yes.
What did you do?
I got my butt kicked. Mm-hmm. I helped get the nets dried out in the morning, going on the nets and getting the fish out and that kind of stuff. Pack them in ice and get rid of salt and things like that.
And help repair the nets?
I help repair the nets, help mend them, yeah.
Where do you sell the fish?
Well, there was a Cole's fish house over here, and then sometimes when during the herring season, these people from Pennsylvania would come down from Fawn Grove and around those places and buy all the herring you had. They'd take them home and salt them and smoke them. There's nothing better than smoked herring.
Now, did you see any change in that industry, the fishing industry in your...
There isn't any.
There isn't any industry?
They're fishing like that anymore, no.
Can you tell me about the decline of that industry?
I don't know. It's too much hard work, is one thing. And nobody wants to fool with it. And the last time I was talking to one of the men down the park, that's just not enough fish being caught to warrant going out and doing it, not working your butt off all night. Just won't do it anymore. See, we had rowboats who didn't have motors. It was Depression days, you either did that or starved to death. So they did that. But they don't have to now. If you don't have any money coming in, go talk to Uncle Samuel, put money in your pocket, buy your food, and give you all that kind of good stuff.
Tell me about, did you eat a lot of fish, or was it more economic to sell it than to eat it?
Well, if we didn't sell it, we ate it. Of course, I said before, I had many a dish of catfish head stew and that kind of stuff. It was good. We eat many bit of groundhog. Mm-hmm. Muskrat.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And all that kind of stuff. We used to trap it, that sort of thing. Up through the river. Mm-hmm. Brother and I used to go out trapping it. Things like that.
And how did you prepare the muskrat?
You cook it and fry it. Grill it and flour and that kind of stuff.
You boil it first?
Well, you parboil it, yeah. Because mm-hmm. Mostly they were old. So you parboil them first and then you fried them. And we survived. Of course, things were cheaper then, but of course, money wasn't as prevalent as it is now. It's another thing. But as I said before, if you had you didn't waste anything. Mm-hmm. Everything was used.
Can you tell me about trapping? Walk me through it as if I knew nothing about how to trap a muskrat.
Well, you'd go up here around these marshes up here, way up the river, up from Havre de Grace, and you'd see it's kind of a gully like in the marshland, you know, where you'd put some of these little steel traps down in there and stake them down good and tight so they wouldn't get away. And leave them there till the next day, and then you go back and work your traps again. And of course, you take the hides and sell them too, as well as the muskrats.
Did you cure the hides?
No, we just sold them as was. Some guys, I forget who was, now some guy around town used to buy all the hides you had, and he'd cure them. But you just get them out.
And these were leg traps you were using?
Yeah, they catch them in the leg. It wasn't very nice, but it was. Now that's on it, because I think they're just along now, those traps.
Yeah. Did you trap or hunt anything else?
Used to go rabbit hunting. That'd be about it.
Did you have a dog for rabbit hunting, or just on your own?
I couldn't afford to feed a dog. They need why I ate it. We ate it. Nope, no dog.
And did you sell the pelts of the rabbits?
Yep. Probably get 15, 20 cents for them, you see. Just get them out without tearing them up, probably get 15 or 20 cents for them. Don't know what he got for them, got put them out of it, but get a few pennies. And then, of course, my brother, he smoked. I never did smoke cigarettes. And he had one of those old bugle machines that you put the tobacco in and put the paper and roll it and make your cigarettes.
And that seemed to be sort of an expensive hobby in that time, wasn't it? To pay for the tobacco?
It was, because the tobacco was fairly cheap, 10 cents a can. You could make 25 or 30 cigarettes with it. So it was no problem there much. But I never got one for cigarettes. I used to chew tobacco. Mm-hmm. I haven't done that for about 45 years now, so I guess I'm better off.
Was your brother older than you?
I had one brother older and one younger, and then a sister, and they're all gone.
And the brother
They're all dead.
The brother that you hunted with was your older brother?
He's my older brother, yeah. They're all dead, yeah. Everybody's gone but me. Mm-hmm.
Tell me more about your childhood in Haverty Grace. What else did you do here? To stay out of trouble or stay in trouble?
Yeah. Actually, we were too doggone poor to do anything. I have never played volleyball, basketball, football, baseball. Never had the time. Some girls here last week when we go play miniature golf with them. I've never played miniature golf. I've missed out an awful lot, but I've enjoyed my family, so I guess I'm all right. I didn't miss that much, I don't guess. But we just didn't have it, so we did without it.
What was your wife saying about the ice on the river?
The ice on the river,
you
used to go ice skating.
Oh, you used to go ice skating, yeah. Yeah. See, out there, we used to cut ice out there. On the, about three or four of the wharves down in Haverty Grace, used to be huge barns with walls, I guess, about 24 inches thick, filled with sawdust. And during the wintertime, my father used to do this, work for this part-time in wintertime. They'd cut ice. We used to have cold winters. And sometimes the ice would be as much as 18 inches thick on the river. And they got there with horses and cut ice, and they stored in those big ice houses for some reason, because there was no mechanical refrigeration.
How did they took the horses right out onto the ice?
Oh, yeah.
Can you describe that to me, what kind of rigs they had to cut the ice?
Yeah, they had great big saws, like a cross-cut hand saw for sawing wood. That's what they use for sawing ice. You just work up and down like that and saw the ice in big chunks, and the horses would haul away.
So they would, the men would cut the ice,
yeah.
And then they'd somehow tie it up? Or?
Yeah, and then the horses would haul it out, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I've skated across a river and stole coal off of coal cars over in Perryville when it was during winter months. Take a set and two or three bags and fill them up and skate back home.
Like all the way across the river?
All the way across the river. I've skated all the way down to Pazuzu's Island. We don't have winters like that anymore, thank goodness. But we managed to survive. It was rough. But we didn't know we were poor, I guess, because everybody else was too. Like I was talking to the barbers one, Pippi featured about a block from us growing up. Had the same problem we did, except his father had a little garden. But other than that, he had the same problems we had. All the same.
Do you remember the lighthouse in Haverty Grace?
Yeah.
What do you remember about that?
Well, it's just that it's always been there. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I say about old John O'Neill, he fired that cannon to say the reason why he didn't run that. Backed up over him and it broke his leg and he couldn't get away, and that's how he come to be a hero. So I don't know the truth in that or not, but the old lighthouse has been there all the time. And of course, when there's a lot of traffic on the river and the bay, we spent an awful lot of it. The lighthouse was really an important factor here in Haverty Grace. It told you where the channel, and of course the buoys marked the channels and things, and the lighthouse gave you a point to guide on, and you knew where they'd go. Even in the middle of the night, you had no problem if you knew what you were doing. And if you knew, we knew the channels and things, we even had no trouble finding any place up all the way up the river there, all the way up to port. But there's very little river traffic now, except for small pleasure boats. But we used to have every boat, every call bond did. And my job was an excursion boat. They used to come up all the time, and there'd be all boats from the quarries up there, and there'd be boats going to Port Deposit. And we had a lot of river traffic here, a lot of it. And they used to bring up, my father worked on the tugboat down there at the river, and they would bring up tomatoes from Eastern Shore on sailboats for the canning houses here, Silver's Canning House. And of course, they'd have to go down and tow them up so they could keep in the channel. Sailboat's kind of hard to keep in the channel, so, but that's what they would do. They'd bring them on in. So Abbey Grace depended on the river a whole lot in its earlier days, but now it's just a pleasure thing.
What else do you remember about the canning houses?
I worked in a canning house when I was a boy. We used to put cans in the chute. Upstairs they had loads of tons and tons and tons of cans. You put them in the chute and they'd go down, they'd all shoot down and they'd fill them up. And I often wondered, now some of those cans I know weren't clean. I don't believe they ever washed. But they had the women down there peeling tomatoes, and they'd peel the tomatoes and they'd get the bucket full and they'd put it on the bucket, have a number on it. It'd go around the turntable, and the man would stand on the end of the turntable, and he'd grab the bucket and dump it in a hopper, and when he did that, he would put a token in the bucket. That meant she had made 25 cents a bucket for peeling tomatoes. Could you think you could do that for 25 cents a bucket of tomatoes?
I guess if I had to.
If you had to, you could do it. But that's, then they used to bring people from Boston.
There it goes. And you were telling me about the people that came up from Baltimore.
Yeah, they used to have men and women come up from Baltimore who were, they'd go from canning house to canning house. They would can corn, tomatoes, string beans at different canning houses, and they just made their living that way. And they lived in those shacks on the canning house property.
What was the ethnicity of these people?
Huh?
What was the ethnicity? Were they white people?
They were white, and they were mostly Polish people. Yeah.
And did you ever interact with the families, these people?
Oh yeah, if you worked at the canning house, you got real friendly with most of them. They were very friendly people, yes, as a rule. Well, once in a while, like anybody else, you run across a stinker.
Right.
Because everybody's not as sweet as I am.
Right.
But in most cases, it was very real compatible, no problems. Then, of course, they cooked the tomatoes in the cans, and during the winter months, they would label them.
Can you describe the structure of the canning house itself?
It's a huge corrugated tin place. It was huge.
Like 100 feet square,
I guess about 100 feet wide and about maybe 200 or 300 feet long. And it had these huge cauldrons in there of scalding hot water. And they'd put the tomatoes in there and they'd dip them and scald them. So the skins would come off easy. And then they would bring them up, and the ladies, then they'd go on the table, and the ladies then would pick them out and skin them and put them in the bucket. And of course, the men, they would dump them. They'd go into the cans. And
that was one person's job, was to dip the tomatoes in the hot water? What kind of thing was he using to dip them?
Well, he had a huge, great big vat like thing.
The vat was like about 6 or 8 feet diameter.
Yeah, and they dip right down in the tomato in the hot boiling water, pour it up, and then they would dump it, and then they do it again. You know, all that tomatoes, all the women peeling all the time, and they fill up the cans. Of course, the cans would fill up automatically, but somebody would be there to check and make sure it filled up all right and everything, and pour up the extra juice. And there was Stockham's. Stockham's also made canned baked beans, and Silver's canned just tomatoes, so it's all he cans tomatoes. But Stockham, that's where the,
The one towards Aberdeen,
that had corn. Yeah. That was the only three canneries around here. But they were huge places. And during the season, they employed quite a few people.
How many? About?
Oh, I imagine about 50 or 75 or 100 people, maybe.
And they lived?
Right. Well, the most good many of them lived here. And of course, as I said before, the transient workers would live in the shacks there. And be about 30, about maybe 50, then move in with all their kids and everything. Oh, shut up. It was quite an industry here in Havre, Grace, but as I said before, it's all gone now, everything.
What else do you remember about Havre de Grace that's no longer there?
I can't, not much of anything that isn't there anymore. Havre de Grace in some places hasn't changed that much. Mm-hmm. Except the downtown area, that's dead. It used to be on Friday night, anybody that had a car would be downtown and they'd park it. They'd sit in the car. And that's where you'd see everybody from Havre de Grace would be downtown Friday night walking the streets or going to shopping. And you'd see everybody else. Of course, you don't do that anymore.
It was a social thing.
More or less a social thing, yeah. We had Heck's Hardware Store, now Christmas time, Jake Heck had all his toys upstairs. Jake and I went to school together. His father ran the store first, and then Jake, after his father died, Jake took over. Had toys upstairs, and you never saw toys in the store except just about a month before Christmas. But now, of course, the toys don't mean a thing to kids. It's all year round. But then there was, of course, the 5 and 10. Bain's 5 and 10 down there. And Miller's and Neumeyer's, they're gone. Lighthouse's gone. They had a men's clothing store. They carried the better clothes. They were the best clothing store in town. They carried the best. And Neumeyer, they carried good stuff. And of course there were two or three other just stores. And then, there's Green's Pharmacy and Lyons Pharmacy. Lyons is still there and still belongs to the Lyons family. Now Green's has changed hands a couple of times. It's up on Washington Street. But nothing really has changed that much down there.
Tell me what it was like when the toys first started coming into the store for Christmas.
Well, my mother would, if I was a good boy, she would take me downtown to look at the toys. I never got any of them. I'd be able to go downtown and look at them. I don't remember getting any toys.
What kind of toys were they?
I can't remember, to tell you the truth. It's a long ago. Mm-hmm. But they weren't anything special, I know that. But mostly games and that sort of thing. Old little automobiles, you use pedals on you. Remember my brother got one of them after I got a little bit older. He got one of them. He was about 5 years younger than me. When he got about 5 years old, he got one of them. I was about 10 years old then. Yeah. But it wasn't too bad, I guess. We survived.
What kind of holiday celebrations did you have?
Well, we had 4th of July, of course.
What was that like in heaven?
Well, we didn't have parades then. Everybody had fireworks. Remember, we used to get the King Syrup can at the lid squeezed on. You'd put a hole in the bottom of it. Then you get some of this carbon that you used to use in carbon lamps. Put in there a little bit of water in it, put the lid on. Then put your foot on it and hold it match to the hole at the bottom. You go boom and blow the lid bottom away. But we couldn't afford to buy many firecrackers. Of course, you saved up all you could before the 4th to try and buy a few, but just didn't happen. But it wasn't that bad. We survived. We were all the same fix. We used to get a few sparklers at nighttime and things like that, but we'd see everybody else and we had a few sparklers, maybe a few Roman candles, things like that. And then, of course, they built a fireworks factory up here in the upper end of Havre de Grace. Archie Fabrizio, I believe his name was. And I had a job going up. I went up there and got a bale of paper, a bag of paste, and a metal rod that long and about as big around my finger. And well, that bill paper was that thick, and I go up there with an express wagon and haul it home. Then I'd roll tubes for firecrackers. Then, of course, they'd put them on a cutter and cut them for different lengths. I forget what I got for them. I didn't get much, but I worked and worked and worked to make, to roll them, you know, to make firecrackers, paste and roll them tight, you know.
And you worked at home and then
dropped
them all back?
Yeah, worked at home. Then I had a friend of mine haul them up to the fireworks factory for me. I think I got a penny a piece for them, for the tubes. They were that long.
About 2 feet?
No, wasn't that long. About 18 inches long. All they were, yeah. Mm-hmm. Got about a penny a piece for rolling them.
And then they would cut them in
little
segments?
They would cut them up in different size, for different size firecrackers.
Yeah. What color was the paper?
Oh, just old gray paper. And they would do the covering, that kind of stuff on them for different things. Yeah.
So the fireworks are all made by hand there?
They were, yeah. And they had an explosion up there and blew the whole thing to pieces.
Wow. What year was that?
That was, Pappas was here with me. That's been 30 years ago then. Yeah.
1960s?
Yeah, that, somewhere around here, yeah. They blew it, the whole thing went up almost complete. That was finished then.
So what year were you rolling paper for them?
Oh, let's see. Before we were married, wasn't it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's been around about 34, 35, somewhere around there, I expect, yeah. Things were really rough. Nobody had any work then.
Yeah,
right during Depression time. That was truly a little bit before I went to work at the grocery store.
So how did you meet your wife?
Well,
honey, this is going on tape.
Well, a Salvation Army officer was stationed in Baltimore, had been sent here, and she knew my wife knew her, and she was here by herself. She wanted somebody to come down and keep her company. She was afraid to stay up there in the building by herself, so she asked Helen to come stay with her. Well. She did, so for a couple, three, she didn't want to be there about 2 or 3 weeks. So she came downstairs one night, and I was sitting down in the seat there waiting for things to start. Some sweet young thing came walking across like this, you know. She said, I got that sucker now.
Nobody says that. That's not true.
I was about 1936, I guess.
It was
yeah.
36.
Yeah.
And I was a beanpole, and so was he. That was my actual boy.
She called the beans on a shingle. But it's been good.
Mm-hmm. 2 years afterwards.
We've never separated. I remember no bruises at show. But that's how we come to meet. We met in church, and that was it. We raised your children in the church, and it's paid off.
Mm-hmm. So what is your fondest memory of growing up in Haverty Grace? The best thing you'd say you got out of it?
I think my best time was in this working in the grocery store. I really loved it because I like people. I love people. That's my problem here. When I retired, I said I worked for the National Guard Bureau in Haverty Grace. And when we left that, I lived in town, of course. I went to, with the AARP and all that, and I was just as busy as a cat on a tin roof. And I moved up here, nothing. Mm-hmm. And I like people to talk to and to associate with. She knows what I know, and I know what she knows. We don't talk that much. Mm-hmm. I still love her, but we just don't talk that much. And I miss it. But I sure did love store work, I mean, for that reason. I like people. I get along pretty good with people as a rule.
And is there a counterbalance, a not-so-good memory of Haverty Grace?
I don't have any bad memories of Haverty Grace. No, I don't. Except my mother remarried. I was the only... Oh, yes, I was yanked out of school and put to work on a farm for a year from a room and board.
Tell me about that.
Well, my stepfather and I didn't get along, so mother knew a family up in Pennsylvania that needed help, so she shipped me up there, and I worked there for room and board for a year. Second year, I got $3 a week, but I never saw any of the money, so I didn't stay very long.
You was about 14 years old.
About 14 or 15, somewhere around there, yeah.
And what did you do there?
Everything. Helped milk the cows, fed the cattle, did everything about anything you do on a farm, I did it. So, but it wasn't bad, I enjoyed it. It was kind of left a bad taste in my mouth, that was all. But we survived.
Any other stories that you remember about?
No, I can't remember them anymore. Except about the old girl there.
Well, thank you very much for your time.
All right, dear.